It's a fantastic day in March. Actually, it's the last Friday in March, just before the clocks go forward in the year 2019. And we're on a location report, actually in Sheffield. We being basically the delightful Bethany Gulliver. How are you, Bethany?
I'm good, thank you.
We've also got the amazingly wonderful Eloise Sheehan.
Hello.
And the navigator extraordinaire that is Ben Lewis.
Hello.
Okay, Ben, I must admit, first impressions of Sheffield, interesting in terms of the car parking system that they've actually got in the O2 Arena. We're currently actually waiting for somebody from the organisers to actually come and actually meet us. I've texted Sam Stone. She may or may not actually be inside. She may, who knows what happened. But I do get the feeling that actually the whole thing is being set up. In case you're wondering what this setup is, Ben, what are we doing here? And that's the pause. We're actually here for the first ever Sheffield hosting of the Sci-Fi Weekend at Part 1. And this is apparently new to the organisers as well, because normally they're over in Wales and on the west coast of the whole thing. So we're actually currently waiting to actually go into it. What is the O2 Academy, actually, not the O2 Arena?
O2 Academy, looks like, yeah.
Eloise, you are an experienced convention goer. As we look to our left-hand side here, we see lots of fans that are actually there, waiting with T-shirts, bated breath, etc., to obviously go in and meet some of the fine folk. How's it shaping up? Or is this a sort of, I mean, is this standard for most events?
Yes, it's pretty standard. They seem quite mild compared to usual. They're not screaming and pushing, so that's pretty good.
Well, I suppose perhaps it's the Sheffield mild-mannered scenario of the whole thing. And, of course, Bethany, your sister actually graduated from the University of Sheffield.
Yeah, she came to Sheffield for uni, so I know what Sheffield's like. It's good to be back.
OK, well, Ben's busily actually going to be doing social media, if we can access both the Siren sites and various other bits and pieces. As a reminder, you're listening to the Midweek Drive on location in the city of Sheffield, in Yorkshire, England, on the planet Earth, for the wonderful joy of Sci-Fi Weekend, Part 1. Well, progress has been made. We have crossed the threshold, Eloise. We are now actually in the inner sanctum of the O2 Academy.
We have eventually made it.
And thanks certainly to the wonderful crack team of coordinators here. Sam Stone is on her way. Sam Jones is on his way, which is very exciting. Bethany, I'm not sure, are you a conference veteran in terms of cons, etc., or is this a whole new experience for you?
Yeah, I've never been to one before, so it's a whole new world.
I can't say I'm a regular. I mean, this is probably about my 10th or 11th all being considered, so. But Ben, it's also your first. We're inside, as I say. Your thoughts?
It's very small, but it should be good. I mean, everyone's setting up at the minute, so it's not quite done, but first impressions, yeah, it's not too bad.
Small but perfectly formed. In a few moments, actually, we're going to be hopefully catching some of the early setter-uppers and having a few words with them about what they're expecting from Sci-Fi Weekend Part 1, 2019. Well, as promised, our very first contributor has actually been brought to us from this point of view, and we're speaking now to the wonderful person who is...
Simon Leach. I'm Brambledown Designs.
Simon, some of my other colleagues are over there, we're relative novices to Sci-Fi Weekender. In fact, this is our first ever Sci-Fi Weekender.
Okay.
But I gather actually it's the first time it's been in Sheffield, so it's a change. What about yourself? How many have you done?
I'm not going to be very helpful here because this is my first Sci-Fi Weekender as well. I do believe this is the very first time it's in Sheffield, and though it is quite an established event, I'm led to believe.
So talk us through what you're exhibiting here and what things you've actually got and what you're currently setting up as we speak.
Okay, well, I'm Brambledown Designs. I'm an artist, and I've been an artist for the past 3 years. Prior to that, I was a science teacher. And
back in the day.
Oh yeah. It's and now we've left and we're having a much nicer time of it. So what I found when I left teaching was that I could actually draw, and I didn't have the self-confidence to do it prior to that, and now I do, and life is wonderful. So I do a whole range of kind of like geeky things, but I also do traditional art. So one of the big things I do. Is this kind of thing here. So it's basically what we've got there is it's a really traditional method called lino printing, and essentially it involves carving lino, and once you've carved the lino, you then ink it, whatever's left behind, then print to the paper, and it's printed onto vintage books there. So basically what we've got is we've got the Lord of the Rings, so we've got Gandalf, Frodo, Sam, Merry and Pippin, all printed onto a 1974 copy of Lord of the Rings, which I think looks rather lovely.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing which in centuries to come, people on Antiques Roadshow or Flogget will actually say, what were they trying to do here? And they say, I see we've got Spider-Man as well, obviously, from that point of view,
well,
a different line.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really go wrong without, Spider-Man's a classic. And
Teacher as well, of course, Peter Parker, so, you know, well, of a radioactive science.
We both have superpowers. We are ex-science teachers.
Exactly.
So, other stuff that we've got, I've got my alien picture there, that's done with a method called pointillism. It took me such a long time to do. I ended up, pointillism, if you guys don't know, because we're obviously in an audio medium, is where
photos
you
do, on Facebook later, don't worry.
Okay, cool. Right, okay. So basically, what you do is you do lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of little dots, and then basically once you've got all the dots together, it forms a picture. So close up, it looks like a bunch of dots. From a distance, it looks kind of amazing.
It's like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle writ large. You can't be observer and observed at the same time.
It's very, very freaky deaky. That one, I ended up dreaming of dots when I did it. It was an experience.
It's a dot matrix.
It really is. See, we did that. Then this one here, he's done basically. I do a bunch of.
I am your father, Luke.
It is. We've got. It's
you see, you obviously responded immediately just on that basis.
It's using the force, clearly. Right, so what that is Darth Vader reaching out, I am your father, yes, style. But it's done with smashed vinyl. So I take a whole bunch of records and then introduce them to a hammer. Doesn't go terribly well for the record, and we end up with a massive pile of bits and pieces, which I then reassemble into a picture. So the original of that was obviously the vinyl. This is a reproduction of it, and it's done in an Andy Warhol style. But I'm very, 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 this is one of my best swaps ever. You come to these places, you do an awful lot of sort of horse trading with fellow traders, and I swapped the original of this for a suit of Stormtrooper armour.
Wow.
That made me very happy.
That would impress the kids, back if you were still teaching.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, well, we were science teachers. We didn't have to try hard to impress the kids. Like, blowing things up was, like,
putting sodium and potassium into water and seeing how they react. It's, you know, wear those safety goggles. Wear those safety goggles.
That's old hat. It's the thermite reaction. That's where it's at, really. Thermite reactions are so
much fun. This is why I switched to higher education and a different line. Listen, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts today. We will come back and actually have more thoughts with you over the next day or so, because we're looking to be here tomorrow as well as later on today.
Oh, that'd be fabulous.
And is there a website that people can actually access your details on?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook if you search for Bramble Down Designs. I've also got an Etsy shop, which if you search for Etsy Bramble Down Designs, you'll find me there. And again on Patreon, which is basically, Patreon is a way of supporting artists. So if you fancy becoming a patron of the arts, you can become a patron of me specifically, and that would be wonderful. So that's on Bramble Down Designs Patreon. It's PATREON, Patreon.
Fantastic. We will speak again. Again, hats off for some fantastic stuff there. And thank you for being our first official interviewee here at Sci-Fi Weekender.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Now, we have moved on, and I've actually managed to collect my three associates here, so the companions from that point of view. I think it's fair to say, Ben, we're looking at some awesome, and I say that again, awesome sculptures and models.
Yeah, it was fantastic. They've done a brilliant job. They're very detailed, very intricate.
And I suspect that as he's wearing a T-shirt which has Creator Works, WROX on it, we might be able to speak to the creator himself. And your name is?
Neil Vickers.
Neil Vickers. Right, okay. Neil, talk us through what we've actually got here, because you've got Medusa, you've got Alien, you've got a whole heap of other sort of areas here.
Well, most of these, like sort of Medusa, the Facehugger and things, they're by Blackheart Models, based in America, which I'm a UK distributor for.
Okay.
They also do the little mini busts and that.
So actually, you're kind of more a kind of franchise where you're distributing it as opposed to making them yourselves?
At the minute, yeah. I mean, I made latex masks for about 10 years at the shop in Newcastle.
Okay. I did detect a slight northern accent there, Neil. I was obviously getting the whole thing through. Ben, any questions?
Yeah, so how are these made? Is it a difficult process?
It'll be sculpted in clay first, and then cast in like a silicon, which is a strong, firm rubber, still flexible enough. Then the resin's poured in, the mould's turned, so it coats it even.
Bethany, you're particularly taken with the Medusa. What are your thoughts?
It's horrifying, which is the biggest compliment I can give. It's clearly supposed to be. It's mad.
And Eloise?
This is really cool. They're really detailed and really amazing.
So, Neil, I've got to ask you, what's your favourite? Or is that a bit like asking you to choose between you and sort of, you know, you can't possibly do it exactly?
Favourite ones are the one that's most challenging to paint, I think. You got Syl there. In the film, she's supposed to be translucent, see-through, so it's quite impossible to paint that. I think I've got a good effect light.
Excellent. And is there a website that people can actually access your work on if they can't get to Sci-Fi Weekender?
We're on Facebook. It's facebook.com/creatorworks.
Fantastic stuff. Neil, great talking to you yourself. Have a great Sci-Fi Weekender. Is this your first, or have you been to lots of these?
It's the first Sci-Fi Weekender. I was here in September, I think, for the sci-fi show with Area 51 did as well.
And UFOs as well. Fantastic. Neil, many thanks. Take care.
Thanks very much.
Great news, Ben. We have managed to locate one of the stars. I say that again, the stars of the whole Writers Central scenario. I know we've spoken to Paul Finch, we've spoken to George Mann, but it's Adrian Tchaikovsky. How are you, Adrian?
I'm very well, thank you.
Now, we just caught you as you're literally having a little wander around the Sci-Fi Weekender. Are you a Sci-Fi Weekender veteran, or is this, like us, your first?
I think I did this event years ago in a slightly different incarnation, but I've not done Sci-Fi Weekender properly before. This is my. I'm a virgin.
Well, and so's Beth.
Makes two of us.
And so's Eloise.
Yep.
And so's Bethany.
I am.
So it's all first
of Sheffield.
Yeah, actually with Sheffield, yes, so am I. So it's completely new from that. Now, Bethany here is one of our English graduates to be. Lots of her colleagues, big Adrian Tchaikovsky fans. Bethany, chance now to actually ask Adrian on behalf of your colleagues anything, really. Well, within the reason, obviously.
I suppose, what's your inspiration, writing-wise?
Mostly spiders.
Oh, I didn't expect that. That was good. Very nice.
Arachnophobia doesn't exist in your world, then?
Actually, it's for people who know how I left things with at the end of Children of Time, it is actually a question I've had to address. Is, you know, if you're living with the spiders and you've got arachnophobia, what do you do? And that does sum up in the next book.
Which, of course, is a matter of weeks away from being published. I put in my pre-order. It is, of course, entitled
Children of Ruin. So that is obviously going to be a jolly book when nothing bad happens.
Sounds very positive. Yeah, I like it.
Eloise, questions for Adrian?
No, I
won't ask for advice, but I mean, initially, you've just literally gone through the door. Thoughts on the location? And I mean, we've already commented on that Sheffield is extraordinary in terms of car parking alone, really.
Well, I came by train, so I wouldn't. Because professional authors don't make that much money.
So, initial thoughts, and when can we actually? Will you be on a panel, or what's the schedule for yourself?
I'm doing a panel at about midday, and there's a signing and an interview and a sort of a meet and greet and various other things, the order of which I haven't really got straight in my head yet.
Clearly, from the performance area, we're already hearing the background of Queen, of course, with the theme to Flash. We've got Sam Jones, we've got Brian Blessed, we've also, of course, got Christopher Judge. Are you looking forward to meeting any of those fine folk?
Well, meeting Brian Blessed would be phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to John Robertson's doing his show, The Dark Room, which is an absolute must-see if you get the chance.
Adrian, it's been fantastic, and we will catch up with you again as the event proceeds.
Thank you very much.
Well, I think we're already getting a sense of the excitement building here. I mean, Adrian Tchaikovsky is currently settling with Sam Stone in Author Central. And Bethany, let's just talk through some of the books that Sam has actually written here. Come on, we'll have a little wander here, and you can actually relay for the listener some of the things that are actually there. Because even though you're gesturing wonderfully, that doesn't work well on radio. So, titles.
They've got some amazing titles. My favourite's Cat of Green Tentacles. That's amazing. They're really cool. And there's so many. I didn't realise she'd written so many.
Cat of the Pendulum. Of course. course, about Cat Lightfoot here. Cat on a hot tin airship, Zombies at Tiffany's, all great from that point of view. There's a collective
then,
one here.
And then her new one's The Complete Lightfoot, which they were just telling me has got an exclusive story in that she did for wedding favours, which I think is so cool.
We've also got, of course, Cthulhu for H.P. Lovecraft fans that are actually there. And let's not forget her connection with Doctor Who, which actually Eloise would probably sort of be best to actually talk about, which is the whole range of things that we've got in this side of things.
Pardon?
So I was just sort of muttering words there for a moment. I was just saying, let's not forget the Doctor Who sort of areas that she's produced in terms of the other sort of areas. But yes, the Devil's End scenario, that's what I was trying to get to. I often think, Ben, when we're doing these events, it's a bit like sort of sporting chaps who kind of have to go down and grab words with the talent in the zone, the mix zone, as we say, with various other things. And when we talk about talent, who more talented in many ways at organising events and things than David J. Howe?
Yay, David!
Yay, me! Yeah, yes, thank you very much, Alex. It's fantastic, as you can hear from the bustle around us, probably, if the mic's picking it up. We're just kicking off. What time is it now? It's 9:45, so it hasn't actually even opened yet. And
well, that's why we've been actually using this opportunity to just grab some of the folk before they set up, etc.
Absolutely.
This is the first time that SF Weekender has actually been based in Sheffield. Obviously, Chic Events, so yes. With John Davis?
Yeah, Johnny Davis is the main man, and hopefully we'll get to have a chat with him. He's just over there at the moment. Shortly. But yeah, it's a little bit of a strange one, because we've been in Sheffield before for Sci-Fi in the City. We've done it two times here before, but usually that's in October. Slightly sort of cut down version of SFW. But this year, because of a great big pile of circumstances, this is actually SFW 10. This is the 10th anniversary of Sci-Fi Weekender, part one. So we've got a fantastic lineup of guests. We've got Sam Jones, Brian Blessed. We've got authors like Paul Finch, Adrian Tchaikovsky.
You could have a battle of the beards, of course, between Adrian and Brian.
You could indeed. And so we're basically setting up for a great weekend of fun and frolics and nonsense and madness that we get up to here with dancing girls and books. And
really? In
and
these politically correct days?
Yes.
Dancing females?
And we have dancing boys as well, just to be completely, completely fair. Oh, and Flash is just, they're doing their dance routine here, rehearsing it.
One of our science fiction fans, and of course key dancers, I believe, is going to be here tomorrow. That's Abigail. But Bethany, are you into singing as well as dancing? Singing and dancing?
Yeah, I danced loads when I was younger, not so much now. But
so what questions have you got for David then?
And what are you most looking forward to about the
week? What am I most looking forward to? I always look forward to the Just a Minute. I run Just a Minute competition on the
Hesitation, deviation, or repetition.
Hesitation, deviation, or repetition. So I'm looking forward to that. That's always fun. We've got, I think, Simon Fisher-Becker's taking part, the actor. We've got actually...
Sorry, my apologies.
Oh, hello.
And speaking of Simon Fisher-Becker, here he is.
Simon.
Good to hear you. Good to see you, sir.
Siren FM.
Well, it's very good to see you. How are you?
Very good indeed. I think we met at Sci-Fi Scarborough a couple of years back.
We probably did 100 years ago. Yeah, I've just had the challenge of the car park.
Successfully achieved.
Well, I got the lift, but it was the wrong numbers. So we go, and then, okay. But anyway.
Achievement unlocked.
Achievement unlocked. To prove it, I'm here.
I'm pleased to find that we also shared the lift. Many thanks, John. We'll speak again later. Yeah, people wandering through in all sorts of ways there.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to Just a Minute. I think we're going to have a knight in full armour taking part on it as well, if all works out. So it's going to be great fun. And we're looking forward to seeing Sam Jones being interviewed, of course, the dance routines. Other interviews, we've got Brian Blessed being interviewed by John Robertson, he of the Dark Room fame. Which is, if you don't know it, it's an absolute crazy, crazy stage game thing. And yeah, it's going to be absolutely fantastic.
I'll just bring in Eloise here for a few seconds. Now, Eloise is here today. She won't be with us tomorrow, because where will you be tomorrow, Eloise?
Walker Stalker in London.
Walker Stalker. So we have here Mr. Johnny Davis.
Hi. The legendary Johnny Davis.
This is Alex Lefchuk from Siren FM.
Good to meet you officially on air. I think we electronically met each other when you were in Spain. At least Sam introduced
us. Wonderful, yeah. We meet in strangest places. One minute you're in Ibiza and the next minute you're in Sheffield. City of Steel.
As the founder of this awesome thing, you must be very proud.
We are. Yeah, we are. It's 10th anniversary. It's going to be a double bubble in celebrations. And, you know, I don't think we can cram any more entertainment in, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, we've got Ben here. We've got Eloise. We've got Bethany. Eloise, thoughts and questions for the creator, Johnny himself.
What are you looking forward to today?
What am I looking forward to? Getting everybody in the building and getting them all relaxed, and then they just press the button and it all goes. Yeah.
Chic Productions, you know, style. And why Chic Productions, either way, for the company now?
Chic Festivals. Well, basically, we don't want to be 100,000 in a field or anything like that. We want to be chic boutique, and we keep it to a small community size. So, based on a Roman legion, we sort of keep it under 5,000, you know?
Nice.
So we know everybody in first name terms.
It was a tribute to Niles Rodgers and various disco bands in the 70s and 80s, but obviously not. It's not Ben. Questions for Johnny.
Yeah, so what got you into sci-fi? What was your kind of big moment to find your hobby, main hobby as sci-fi?
It's not my main hobby, because I do a lot of events, okay. As you probably know or don't know, you know. So we stage about 19 festivals a year and over 500 club shows worldwide. And we've got a whole media division of magazines, TV, radio and everything. But realistically, we started in the live world, where rock and metal and things like that. And then along the way, somebody from a magazine came up and said, there's a lot of conventions and a lot of exhibitions out there, but there's not actually anything that's like a community festival as such, you know, which you guys do because you do the residential thing. Would you like to have a little try about it, you know? And I looked at the magazine and it was quite obvious what to do, you know. You needed author zones, cinema zones, gaming zones, you know, some big entertainment at night, and I think that's one of the specialities that we do. Well, we've got Flash playing in the background, and I think that's going to get played about 100 times this weekend, you know?
Especially
after being out for dinner with him last night, you know? The amount of people have come and went, you're Flash Gordon, you know? And he says, yeah, but I was also in Ted, yeah, but we don't talk about that because...
He was also in Highwayman, and he was also in 10.
And he's been in a lot of things, you know? But getting back to your question, you know, that was the birth of... originally it was called SFX because we did it with that magazine, but then they had their own ideas and we'd ours. Thank God we kept ours because it started to grow into something really something.
Were you involved, Johnny, in any way, shape, or form when SFX had two events in Norbrecht Castle in Blackpool?
Absolutely not. Nothing to do with me.
I didn't think so. Nothing to do with me at all.
You know, okay. There's a golden rule with our stuff. We've either got full control or we don't do it, you know.
Sounds very Scottish.
I'm actually Canadian, believe it or not. I was just brought up in Scotland.
Seriously?
Yeah. You'd never know the accent, though, would you?
Here was I going to talk about Brexit Day, and whoa, it's a different line entirely.
Well, I can talk about Brexit. I've got loads of political views, but, you know, at the end of the day, what happens at breakfast? We go to the sci-fi weekend.
Exactly. Though, you know? So.
That's how much we think.
Ben, any final thoughts?
Yes. What's one thing, I mean, it's my first time here. It's my first time at any sci-fi convention.
Okay.
What is one thing you think I should take away from today?
I think you should go and connect to the people, because at the end of the day, this is all about affinity in a community, you know. And this community supports each other, and it's the fans who actually create what we do next as far as the choreography of the SFW Weekender. But you'll only understand that if you get into their heads, but they're quite happy to talk to you about, you know. But they're of one mind here. It's a similar mindset, because a lot of people come here. They're not really the most outgoing people in the world, and maybe not get the biggest social circle. However, when they get here, they've got a few thousand of their best mates, man, and they go absolutely mental, you know? It's geek camp, you know?
Johnny, I'm delighted very much to have a few words with the good self. We'll speak again, I'm sure, as the event proceeds. And look forward to, obviously, the joke has just passed us by. Sorry, it's very strange.
Yeah, a few characters about now, you know? He just kidnapped somebody as well.
And for completists, is actually the Cesar Romero version of the Joker with the original Batman series, just in case people were wondering which one.
Right.
But again, we'll speak again very soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you very much.
Well, who would have thought that Simon Fisher-Becker would have had equal challenges with car parking as we had from the Siren Radio people today? But that's by the by. I'm just actually looking at a fantastic Sam Stone poster. Is that not a fantastic Sam Stone poster, Dave?
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, I spot that from a mile. I thought, she's made it. She's got her own poster.
It's all great stuff, though. In fact, she's even bringing food over for David as well. It's fantastic.
Oh, I've got Rocky Road now.
Rocky Road at Sci-Fi Weekender. There's cake, even Rocky Road cake, which is delicious as well. People bringing things around.
Before Simon Fisher-Becker walked past, or rode past, whatever you, Eloise, we were talking about Where You Are Tomorrow, which is the Walking Dead thing. So as somebody who's regularly been immersed in those sort of things, as a kind of one of the ambassadors, really, how does this shape up so far?
Well, this is really good, but it's just a lot louder than I'm used to. So
it's a lot louder.
Yeah, you think this is loud?
It's not started yet.
Bethany, we were commenting on the range and quality of Sam's books. Would you like to quiz her about the texts and everything from Cat Lightfoot onwards? Because I think you're a fan of Cat of Green Gables.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing title. I was just saying the titles are brilliant. Is it a few different series? Is that how it works?
Yeah, the Cat Lightfoot books is a whole series. Basically, she's a Victorian steampunk demon slayer. and I like to set each book as a different theme based on either a favourite film that I watched or a favourite book, as in Anne of Green Gables. So we've got Cal Green's Pentacles. So obviously we've got a bit of Lovecraftian elements in that as well. So
that's brilliant. And what's your inspiration for these books?
Sometimes David, actually. The very
I can see him being a very inspiring person.
I am. I'm quite a good inspirational demon slayer myself, you know, so...
Well, partly it was that we came up with the first title for the first book, which is Zombies at Tiffany's, and David came up with that. He said, why don't you do something like, you know, like Zombies at Tiffany's? I'm like, okay, ping, light bulb. And also the inspiration for Kat herself was my daughter, who was at the same age at the time. She was 19, and she just sort of was so sassy and funny, and I just thought, yeah, she could be a Victorian demon slayer easily.
Eloise, I was commenting on your fascination for Doctor Who. Obviously, you'd be a key person to actually sort of quiz Sam on the Doctor Who adaptation that she was involved with recently, doing DVD commentaries for as well.
Oh yeah, I was having a look at that over there. Has it got John Pertwee involved?
It is. It was the John Pertwee era, and it was based on the characters created in The Daemons, which was, you know, one of the characters called Ollie Hawthorne, and Damaris Heyman, who is still with us, you know, very, very... good age now, but she's still an amazing lady.
Is she a national treasure yet?
She ought to be.
Absolutely.
Ought
to
be, totally.
Yes.
She is a really strong lady. And she was very inspirational in the story itself because she really had an affinity for the characters she played in The Daemons. So a lot of what she said brought that whole collection to life, really.
That's amazing. Do you reckon you do anything else involved with Doctor Who?
Well, I think we need to go over to David for that one because he's just finished a novella.
I have. So, what was the question? Sorry.
Anything more Doctor Who?
Yes, indeed. Well, I've literally just finished writing a novelisation of Deimos Rising, which was a Doctor Who spin-off film that I wrote in 2004. So I've done the novelisation of that, and I set myself the challenge of linking together the John Pertwee, The Daemons, with another spin-off film called Downtime, with Deimos Rising, and with a book that Telos published in 2007 or something called Child of Time, which completes the story of what the demons were actually after, what they were trying to achieve, why they came to Earth, blah, blah, blah. So this novella, kind of novelization, plugs the gap between all of those things and hopefully makes sense of them all into one coherent history. You must be mad. It'd be easy just to write a book, you know, but you have to come up with all this kind of crazy stuff as well.
That sounds amazing. When did that be available to read?
That's coming out in November, because we're also publishing a novelisation of yet another spin-off film called Syl. And I don't know how good your Doctor Who knowledge is, but do you remember the Omega creature Syl from Vengeance on Varos?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah, played by Nabil Shaban, absolutely brilliantly. Well, Nabil is back to play Syl in this spin-off film that Real Time Pictures are making. That's being released by Koch Media on Amazon and everywhere in November. And we've got the tie-in novel by Philip Martin, who created Syl and who wrote the film. So in November, you're going to be able to buy Syl, you're going to be able to buy White Witch of Devil's End on Blu-ray, because that's coming out on Blu-ray, and you're going to be able to get the novelisations of Deimos Rising and the Syl story, and that's all in November. So it's going to be a busy month for us.
It's worth noting as well, David, that as revealed to Alan Stevens back on A Midway Drive, that Eloise's grandfather has a big connection with Doctor Who.
Did he?
Share it, please.
Did he?
Yeah, he was a scenery director for Doctor Who for 25 years, from William Hartnell over to Tom Baker.
What was his name?
William Dennis.
William Dennis? So he was a scenery director. So what does a scenery director do?
What, I'm getting each head of set,
yeah,
but that's
go
what
over there. take that flat and put it there.
Yeah, he built a lot of the sets as well.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's amazing, because I was very good friends with Barry Newbury and Ray Cusick, two of the production designers, the senior designers on Doctor Who, who did a lot of the Hartnell stories and stuff. So they're both, unfortunately, no longer with us, but I'm sure they'd have known your grandfather if they were working with him and doing all that sort of stuff, because they would do the actual designs, you know, on the big A4, big blue print paper thing, you know.
Yeah. Perhaps. That would have been good.
That's amazing.
I think that could be probably arranged, Eloise. Also, major fan of Paul McGann-Zero.
Well, who isn't? You know, who isn't? Paul McGann-Zero, you mean the film?
That's harsh, but yes.
No, he was brilliant. We love Paul McGann.
Yeah, great guy.
Absolutely love Paul McGann.
Great guy, so,
yeah.
I've got to reveal it, Eloise. You've taken this to the extent of even getting body art, have you not?
Yes, I have. Thank you very
much.
Which
was actually autographed by
Paul McGann, yeah.
Really?
We won't ask you to reveal
it. Don't reveal it.
It's radio, it wouldn't work, you know.
It wouldn't work on radio. Good Lord, put that away. Where have you got that autograph? That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Well, Sam has now done wonderful duties as introducing another fantastic talent, and we're about to speak to the fantastic individual who is...
Lauren K. Nixon.
The Lauren K. Nixon. Fantastic stuff. So share with us at the team, what marvellous things have you brought to Sci-Fi Weekender today?
I brought four of my books. I've got The House of Vines, which is a contemporary fantasy with a sort of quest twist. I've got Echoes of the Light, which is three short science fiction stories. Mayflies, which is a short story about death and unbeginnings, which doesn't come out until next week, so it's an exclusive for the event. And a silly Shakespearean romance, in case anyone feels like being weird.
We always need silly Shakespearean romances, don't we, Bethany?
Yeah, we love Shakespeare, and silly's even better. Sounds good.
And I do detect a slight steampunk aspect that you're trying to channel here.
It's camouflage. Yeah,
makes
camouflage.
Ben?
Yeah, so when you decided to become an author with sci-fi, what was the biggest reason for you doing that? Was there any source of inspiration, or was it a case of actually you just wanted to try your hand at writing?
Well, I've always been writing stuff, and then sort of eventually it turned into stuff that was like a whole story. But in terms of science, I did a science degree. I'm an archaeologist technically, so all of the science...
Lara Croft in disguise.
I am, yeah. Well, I said camouflage. So I do a lot of reading around science anyway, and then stuff. The one of the ones in Echoes of the Light is about a helium-3 plant, which we're... There was
do the people speak very, 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 very high with a helium-3 plant? Sorry.
Yes, they do, when it escapes. yeah, it's a possible new fuel that we might be able to harvest from the moon. And that sort of fed into that story. So, take stuff from everywhere.
Bethany.
That's very cool. I was just wondering, what's the writing process for you? Like, is it a case of just sit down and write till it's done, or how does it work?
Sometimes I plot it out. Sometimes it just happens. Fox and the Fool just happened. That's the Shakespeare one. Yeah. I went to see the performance and I just wrote that one. But most of them you have to sit and chip away at.
Sorry, I'm joking with the emotion of the whole thing there. Would you actually say that that's pretty much the same, even if you're doing a creative writing dissertation?
Yes, I would
there
say
we
so.
Are. Answer solved.
It's been that way, yeah, for a few weeks. Just chipping away the odd writer's block.
Maggie will be having it. Where can people find you online? Is there a website and things to go to?
Yep, there's laurenknixon.com. I'm also on Amazon and Smashwords, Kobo and Nook, and iBooks.
And something we've been putting to most of our interviewees today, thoughts on the shape of the Sci-Fi Weekender so far?
It's shaping up to be a good one. I miss the fact that it's in Wales. I miss Wales, but this is looking fantastic, I have to say.
Got to go from West Coast to East Coast some along the time,
yeah.
Right, surely?
Absolutely, yeah.
And presumably you're also on the usual social medias as well?
I am, yes. Yeah, Instagram. They're all under Lauren K. Nixon. You'll find me if you search for that one.
Sure, we'll speak again before the actual event is sorted out, either today or tomorrow. A genuine privilege. Take care and enjoy the event.
Thank you.
So, George Mann, who we're about to sort of speak with, has just come out with probably one of those best quotes of the day so far. George, you thought it was?
A nightclub.
This is great. Come here often. Got any quo? He's Sheffield, you know. We folk from the northeast, you know, places like Middlesbrough and Darlington. We're not used to this southern wildness.
No, well, that said, we'd probably just stay up all night and we'd still be in the nightclub at this time of the day. So,
anyway. I'm very impressed with the fact. I thought for a moment you were wearing a Captain Britain t-shirt, but no, it's actually a Stormtrooper.
I bought it at Lucasfilm, though, at the actual head office, so that's my claim to fame.
See, that's credibility, Ben. You know, now, Ben, I know you're into your Star Wars. Can we say anything about the upcoming Star Wars material that you're doing?
Yeah, I can tell you what's been announced about it so far.
Ben, would you like a kind of...
Yeah, we'll go for that. Yeah, go on. Yeah. Elaborate, please.
Okay, so it's called Star Wars Myths and Fables, and it's a collection of stories that are myths and fables from throughout the Star Wars universe, throughout all the different eras of Star Wars.
Sound of the Force in the background there, actually.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that a tummy rumbling?
And... it's fully illustrated, so every story's got a beautiful painting with it that relates to the story. And on StarWars.com, they've got a sample from one of the stories at the moment called The Knight and the Dragon, which is... I don't want to give away the spoilers, but it's you can get the gist of it. It's kind of, they're kind of like Grimm's Fairy Tales, but for Star Wars.
I was very impressed with the Tales of Trenzalore, yourself, of course, and Paul Finch, sort of featured there. You, of course, brought back the crinoids.
Yeah, absolutely. I was trying to think of the setup of that story. That thing was, you know, there was a barrier around the planet Trenzalore and nothing technological could get through it. So we'd had the wooden Cyberman in the episode, and I was trying to think what else would get through. Well, a crinoid, vegetable matter.
Already wading her way through that is indeed Eloise. How far have you got so far?
If I say one chapter, that sounds makes me sound
very exciting.
There's lots of good stuff to come.
It's because you made me get up early, so I didn't want to read. But I was having a look, and you've written for quite a few different doctors. Which doctor do you prefer writing for?
Actually, so I've written for all of them apart from the 13th now, and the 12th is probably my favourite to write for. Not because, I mean, he is an interesting doctor, but it's more that I've written more for the 12th Doctor than any others. So when I sit down to write the Doctor, it's the 12th Doctor's voice I hear in my head, and I have to change gears if I want to be someone else. You know, if I want to write for one of the other Doctors, so I go back to the source material and I watch some episodes, and then that gets the voice going in my head again.
What was it like writing for the 8th Doctor then?
The 8th Doctor? Well, that's difficult, actually. I mean, because there's so many different versions of the 8th Doctor. There's the TV, you know, original TV movie, then there's the Night of the Doctor, then there's all of the Big Finish stuff, then there's the BBC 8th Doctor from the novels, and it was kind of finding a story that hadn't been told was the difficult thing, actually.
How do you choose, Eloise?
Well, I don't know. The 8th Doctor is very good. I had something to say then, I've gone right off track. Apologies.
Well, something about the voices, which I thought was particularly interesting, because that was something I did notice. You do manage to capture the sound of the actual characters. Is that something that you immerse yourself in to get that sort of rhythm of speech and so on?
Yeah, thank you. I work really hard to do it, actually. With the Big Finish Doctors, I'll put the audios on and listen to the kind of intonation of their voice, the way they frame dialogue. With the TV Doctors, I go back to the original episodes. When I wrote the War Doctor book, it was quite difficult because we only had that one story with John Hurt at that time. They hadn't done any audios or anything. So I just had to watch the same story over and over and over again until the voice is kind of in your head, and then you can just capture it when you write. So it's something I've worked really hard to do. I think that there's a tendency for people to think the Doctor's a generic character, and he's not, or she's not.
So what made you want to be a writer? Is it something you've always wanted to do? Or?
Very much so, yeah. When I was a kid, I used to fold A4 pieces of paper to make little booklets, and I'd draw. Yeah, I think it's the thing a lot of us do. And I've still got one of them, which is like, it's about a caveman called Noof. I used to write these books, you know, which were rubbish, you know, little children's books, but they were fun. And over time, I just continued to write, and then stopped for a while in my late teens. You know, discovered beer and, you know, other things. And then what actually happened is I got my first house, met my wife, got our first house, and I got my first PC, which I'd rented from Radio Rentals. As really old-fashioned PC. This was pre-internet. And I booted it up, and I was really excited. I set it all up, and I had nothing to do on it. There was no games, there was no internet. Not even tennis at that point. There was probably solitaire. So I opened Word, and I started writing for something to do, and ended up reminding myself why I really liked doing it. So that led to
a career.
Yeah,
an awesome career. Eloise.
Going back to Doctor Who, would you actually want to write for the 13th Doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to keep a full house, to be honest. So if the opportunity arrives, I mean, I think they did a wonderful thing, actually. When the 13th Doctor first arrived, most of the publishers working in the comics and the books decided to get female creative teams to write for her at first. So they've got, on the comic, they've got female artists, female colourists, female letterers, female writers. And, you know, I've been writing Doctor Who for years. I'm one of the hoary old blokes who's been writing Doctor Who for decades. So it felt good to step back and let these new voices come in and tell the stories. And I think over time, hopefully, things will kind of be able to move back in and do some stories as well and keep the melting pot going. But hopefully before she ends her tenure, I'd like to write for her.
That's really good. Thank you.
In terms of, say, just the whole system of one of the criticisms of Chris Chibnall's series, it was that he employed a number of writers who basically didn't really have a lot of experience in science fiction. So I'm basically saying, on your behalf, George, are you available, should you get the call, to write a TV episode for the next series?
Absolutely. I wait by the phone every day.
He's out there, Chris. He's out there. For God's sakes, show some sense. Get George Manning to actually write some decent stories.
I would love to do it. I mean, it's a dream come true, isn't it? That's the thing.
Terry Nation might have said the same thing, basically, when he was forced to actually do something about the Daleks.
Yeah, and you know, and I am working on a TV script at the moment for something that hasn't been announced yet. So I'm gaining the experience, and as I understand it, with the TV show, they like to have people who've written scripts before for TV. So that's the thing. I'm going to try and get that on my CV next.
It'll happen, George. I know, because you've got the power of Siren and Southside and the Midweek Drive behind you, and the Stone Tape. So what more
can
you say?
I can feel that support backing me up.
Very exciting times now, because we actually have reached the legend, the awesome person without whom Highwayman would not have been the same. Of course, I'm talking about the legend that is Sam Jones. How are you, Sam?
Thank you for having me, Alex. Appreciate it. Yeah.
You made your way over to the British Isles, Sheffield, the Steel City.
Yes.
Obviously, we have Brian Blessed. It's almost like a Flash Gordon reunion.
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, you know, when Brian, right now I'm having a lot of fun, and obviously when Brian steps in the room, he takes it over. So it's best we get this interview out of the way right now. But I love it. You know, some actors get offended, but I love it. I mean, he's a one-man show. And I've done a few Q&As with him before. And he has a unique gift, how he takes the room over. And I mean, last time we did a Q&A together, it was Melody Anderson, Del Arden, Brian, and myself. We each had a microphone, and we were introduced. We answered a few questions. And when he started to speak, he walked downstage, went out in the audience, and that's the last time they heard from Melody and myself. It's wonderful. I love it.
Ben.
Yes, and obviously it's your first time in Sheffield, I believe.
I think I have to ask Brian, but it's been 40 years. If I'm not mistaken, I think we were here when we filmed a little bit, back in 79, I think so.
How does it feel to come back now then to familiar territory?
I mean, it's 40 years ago, you know. But yeah,
it's just like yesterday though. It's a time machine, yeah. That's all, Sam.
But I love the UK. You know, it's been good to me. I mean, my gosh, that's where I really got my start. Flash Gordon. A lot of people don't know, but our first week of filming, the only exteriors was in the Isle of Skye. That was our first week. And then everything else was L Street, Shepperton, just indoors for all the studio work. And then we went to a unique place a lot of people don't know, called Brooklyn Weybridge. It's where they had Dino De Laurentiis needed some gigantic aircraft hangars, because
Dino De Laurentiis.
Yeah, the sound stages weren't big enough. And this particular aircraft hangars, they were surrounded by an old racetrack from the 1930s. Anyway, that was a unique experience as well. I love it every time we come here.
And of course, let's not forget 10 and all the other sort of series you've done, including, of course, Ted, because Ted and
yeah.
10. It's very confusing.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the film 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that was my first film in 78. Flash Gordon came along in 79, but obviously Ted and Ted 2 a few years ago, that opened up that younger age demographic for me. It was always, you know, my age, 65 or 60s, and then our kids, 40s and 30s-year-olds. And now I'll get the younger generation. So that means I'll get at my table when I get to meet the fans. I have grandpa, son, and grandson. Grandma, a daughter, and granddaughter. It's wonderful. I
all generations. Bethany, yeah. Final question.
Did you always want to be an actor?
Did I always want to be an actor? No. I mean, I joined the Marine Corps very young, right out of 17 years old. And I was going to be a lifer, meaning to be there forever. And I started playing Marine Corps football, American football. And I became really good. And I thought I was so good that the National Football League needed me. So I finished my time in the Corps and showed up in Seattle to try out for the Seahawks. And they said, no, we don't need you. But, you know, at the same time, when a door is shut, whether God does it or not, if you're open-minded, the good Lord will always open another door. So I think a day later, I read an article about Clint Eastwood, and that inspired me to go to Los Angeles. I went to L.A. in March. We're in March right now, right? 2019. So in March of 77, 42 years ago, I ended up going to Hollywood.
Sam, it's been fantastic. We'll catch up with you again later. I think Sam needs to take you away. Many thanks indeed. Take care. Cheers there.
It's a show that will, you know, be similar. And they will not want a recognised Game of Thrones actor, and they will say, you know, we want this to be completely new. We don't
you're
want
listening
any
to the,
crossover.
To the fabulous sound of Ian Beattie, of course, from Game of Thrones.
Yes,
just talking
indeed.
About typecasting various other bits and pieces. Maisie Williams, I think, has that challenge as well.
To a certain extent, I think Maisie does, but Maisie is so incredibly good at her job, and I have seen Maisie's other performances. She did an amazing Channel 4 film about cyberbullying, where she was so different to her character. So Maisie has, you know, she has that range, and she will have that range. Plus, I mean, let's face it, Maisie is so big now in our
she was
culture.
Quite a small person, actually.
Quite a small person, but in terms of her impact, she is so big that I'm pretty certain Maisie could get a project off the ground if she so wished.
Much like Ian Beattie, I'm sure.
I don't think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think I would do it for a cup of coffee, to be honest with you. So.
As long as, I mean, would you go mocha or would you go flat white? What would
cappuccino. Skinny, of course.
Skinny,
but
yeah, Ben.
Yeah, so obviously Game of Thrones has become a massive thing over the last few years.
Yeah.
And I know when we've spoken to people in the past, the challenges that come with setting the scenes for the different parts in the series. What would you say your most challenging scene was developing?
Well, there were two of them. The two most challenging scenes I had were my last two scenes, which was season 5, episodes 9 and 10. Most challenging as an actor, most challenging in terms of their subject material, and without wanting to give any spoilers away, for those who have seen the scenes, Meron finally revealed his personal side. Good, that's all I'm saying, I'm not going to do spoilers. I hate spoilers. But Meron revealed his personal side, and for those who have seen it, that those two scenes proved to be the most difficult for me, without a shadow of a doubt. But I was aware when I read them that they were a gift from the producers, from David and Dan. It was like they were saying to me, you know, thank you for 5 wonderful years. Here's the two most challenging scenes you'll ever have, with a spectacular denouement, and also probably the best director you've ever worked with, so try not to mess it up.
So no pressure, basically. No pressure whatsoever.
No
exactly.
Pressure.
No, exactly.
No pressure.
Eloise.
Hi, I actually met you last week, but I didn't get...
Yes, she did.
Yeah,
yes, she did. How was
she's
I
not stalking you.
I knew I'd seen her before.
You
see, Eloise is a Doctor Who fan like myself. So that's... Eloise knows all about Doctor Who, so...
Yeah, I didn't actually get a chance to ask you about The Hanging Girl, being Irish. How was that for you, being in that...
The Hanging Girl was my... Let's work this out. Was my first proper television job for a mainstream channel. And I was auditioned quite late to it. And it was a wonderful experience because I got to meet the McGann brothers, became friends with at least a couple of them, Stephen and Paul. I would still bump into Paul on a regular basis.
Do make sure when you say Paul that Eloise is a big fan of Paul.
Huge fan, huge fan. But I thought Paul was tremendous as the doctor. I mean, I thought he was a tremendous doctor. He brought that almost quirkiness of old. I mean, if you're an older fan of Doctor Who like I am, my doctors were John Pertwee and Tom Baker.
I'd even say Patrick Troughton, actually.
Yeah, they were my doctors. So I thought Paul almost brought it back to the old school as far as I was concerned. And he also, let's be honest, completely resurrected the franchise. Which was no mean achievement. So, yeah, I thought Paul did remarkably well.
We've had a Scottish doctor, we've had an English doctor, we've got a female doctor. What about an Irish doctor? Would you consider becoming the 14th doctor after Jodie?
I would actually pay them to be a doctor. I would pay them to be the doctor, honestly, I really, really would. It was a remarkable coincidence, and I was explaining this to you last week, Eloise, that it was only because of Game of Thrones that I got into Doctor Who, and I wanted to be in Doctor Who since I was 10 years of age. But I worked with a wonderful actor, Mark Gatiss, who was Tycho Nestorius, the Iron Banker in Game of Thrones, and we became good mates. And it was him that got me into that episode, because he wrote that episode. So when I auditioned for it, it was basically, they phoned back. I think I did a self-tape for it. And I was expecting, you know, let's go and meet somebody. Oh, no, you got the job. Sorry? You got the job. So it was the most wonderful experience. For those Doctor Who fans out there, I will also tell a story that I told Eloise. The first day we were on, there were only three of us filming. It was a Sunday. We were all dressed in our soldiers' outfits, got the makeup on. And one of the girls that was looking after us said, come on and we'll take you to the green room. Because it's going to be about an hour before we start filming. There's some tea, coffee, some sandwiches, some biscuits. The green room was the TARDIS.
Wow.
They couldn't get me out of it. They could not get me out. It's like, we're filming now. No, no. 10 more photographs. 10 more photographs. Just give me a second.
Well, having reconnected again with Eloise a week later, I'm sure we'll speak again before too long.
I'm
Take
sure
care.
We will. Thanks. Lovely to talk to you. So.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we've just seen the fantastic pop-up puppet cinema, and we're speaking now to pop-up puppet cinema people extraordinaire, whose names are?
Andy.
And?
John.
Okay, talk to us about why you inspired to actually create this awesome event for Sci-Fi Weekend.
The first show was done as a surprise present for someone's birthday, and we were just doing it, mucking around, and at the end of the show, people said, well, where did you book them? And at that point, we thought, ooh. Maybe you can do something with this. Maybe people would like to see it. So that's how it started. It was a surprise birthday present for a Back to the Future themed birthday party.
Well, we just caught the hind end, of course, of the Flash Gordon interpretation. I can't wait for the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Bethany, you were a little bit scared.
Yeah, I thought it was just a plethora of colours and things. It was great. How long does it take you to make like the puppets and the props and things? Do you make them all yourselves?
Yeah, well, we do them all ourselves. So what we do is we sort of build upon foam, and then over the top we put a skin, and then decorate everything, and we build all the props. How long would you say a show?
Well, we travel with a glue gun and scissors, and we're always fixing and remaking stuff as we go along as well. But yeah, it takes a good few months, and we work on all the audio as well, yeah, with the sound effects and the music and everything. So,
what's the most ambitious production that you've done so far?
I'd say either Flash or The Thing, for different reasons. Flash is like really big in terms of scale, number of puppets, props, everything. But with The Thing, the puppets themselves are more elaborate. You've got transforming puppets, spiders, monsters, all that kind of thing. And yeah.
So is this the John Carpenter thing, or the classic thing from another world from the 1950s?
John Carpenter's The Thing.
The 1982 one.
Eloise.
Do you primarily do science fiction shows or other types of genres?
We're doing, so for part two of Sci-Fi Weekend in Yarmouth, because it's over Halloween, we're bringing our two horror shows there. So The Thing being one of them, and Nightmare on Elm Street being the other one.
And then
so we've dipped our toe into horror.
And Jaws.
And Jaws as well, yeah. So I think
the key that we try to go for is to have people know what's happening in the film. They're familiar enough with it. So if you make a joke about the film, they go, you know, you don't need to provide that information. And yeah, you keep it going brisk, and just have fun with it.
And so were you influenced by Gerry Anderson? Or any other puppets? The Muppets, perhaps?
For me, more so the Muppets. I used to, when I was a kid, I had the Muppet records on vinyl, and I used to duck behind the sofa and perform them for my parents with all my toys.
Especially for yourself, actually, because I used this on the journey down here from Lincoln. Good grief, the comedian's a bear. No, he's a nut. He's wearing a necktie.
We've actually got, tomorrow when we do Flash Gordon on the main stage, shortly after that, we've invited a Muppeteer to join us for a Q&A. We've got Mike Quinn coming, who used to work for Jim Henson. He didn't do the Muppet Show, but he did the Great Muppet Caper and the Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. And
finally, how can people find Pop-Up Puppet Cinema online? Is there a website?
There is a website, popuppuppetcinema.co.uk. We're also on Facebook, just as Pop-Up Puppet Cinema, and on Twitter as puppet_cinema.
Okay, well, I've left some of my team to actually sort out a few bits and pieces, and we've met the Joker, and I can only refer to you guys as the Flashettes.
Yeah.
Is that okay, the Flashettes?
Yeah.
The Radio Rock City musical, the Rockettes. Here we have the Flashettes, etc. Let's come to Mr. Joker first. You launched this whole Sci-Fi Weekender off, did a sterling job. How do you feel it's going so far?
It's going really, really well, actually. We were a little bit worried it was going to be just too busy everywhere, but we've managed to deal with all of it. And yeah, just everyone seems to be enjoying everything. We've got gaming, we've got a panel going on behind me that you can probably hear.
I know. We've already spoken to Adrian Tchaikovsky and indeed George Mann and indeed the other fine folk there. Now let's introduce these fine folk here that we've got. Who's the kind of the leader of the troupe? That would be.
Hi.
And your name is?
Jessica.
Jessica, would you like to introduce your team, please?
So these are the Area 51 dancers, and we've been doing it for years. Like, we do all the stage shows for Sci-Fi Weekend.
Okay, go on, give us some name checks then. Who have we got?
Okay, so we've got Roxy.
Hi, Roxy.
Lily.
Hi.
And Lily.
Hi.
We have Fern.
Fern.
Hello.
And Harriet.
Hi.
Excellent.
Mini Flash with us today, Zena as well.
Hello, Emma.
Hello.
Okay, so roughly, in terms of putting the routine together, how long did it take you? And what was the inspiration? Obviously, Flash Gordon.
But. Yeah, it was quite hard, actually, because it's quite hard to choreograph to that music, because it's very repetitive. But it was sort of watching the film.
I thought the bouncing up and down and the raising of the elbows. That's Strictly stuff, that is.
Yeah. We had to get a few Flash moves in there, choreographically anyway, so yeah.
And you're a regular at Sci-Fi Weekender?
Yes, this is I think I worked it out, it's about my 8th or 9th one, this one for me, so.
So what are your own particular likings in the whole science fiction theme? Was it a case of, no, I just do it because it's a job?
No, I love it. Every time I've come to Sci-Fi Weekender, I absolutely love it. Like, I'm a big sci-fi fan, so yeah.
There we go. And what's it like working with the Joker? Because it can be a bit scary, I would have thought.
Oh yeah, we don't know about that one.
Well, it's been great meeting you girls. I'm sure we'll connect again before too long. And will you be doing part two?
Yes, we've got another 3 dancers, so you'll be seeing us again.
That's fantastic. And indeed, Yarmouth, are you up for Yarmouth as well, part 2?
So, yes, are we? Adam, yes.
What,
Joker,
sorry?
Yes, we are.
What was the question, sorry?
Yarmouth.
Yarmouth, yeah, Yarmouth is the next one. 10 part 2. Yes. Halloween is the first day of it.
And if people want to actually contact, well, I've named you the Flash Jets, but the dance troupe in action, do you have a website? Is there a way people can reach you?
Area 51.co.
Send us an email if you want to be a dancer. We'll show you how, essentially.
Area 51. And look out for the UFOs, no doubt.
Yes, yeah.
We have just experienced a force of nature, I think it's fair to say. Sam Jones and Brian Blessed on stage. Your thoughts, Eloise?
I am in shock, and the poor children, that's all I'm going to say.
And Bethany?
Incredible, honestly, just beyond words, hilarious.
And Ben?
Yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal. It's something I've not quite seen before.
Well, there we are, you see. It's all this more exciting now because we're speaking to the other force of nature. It's the literary editor for Starburst magazine. It's Ed Fortune.
I don't think I can compare, but thank you.
So, Ed, it seems like only yesterday we met up for the first time at the Worldcon in London. And look, here we are in Sheffield.
Indeed. I've also just become overawed by the voice of Brian Blessed and John Robertson doing his Bugs Bunny to Brian Blessed's unique Brian Blessedness.
Oh, we spoke to Sam earlier. I'm sure we speak with Brian in the fullest time. Questions for Ed Fortune, please, as a literary soul. She's gone. She's coming completely. It's the awesomeness, basically, from that point of view. Just to check, we've got the right. It is literary editor, Starburst magazine.
Currently a literary editor.
Yeah, that's fine. Ben.
Yeah. So obviously this is the first time it's been hosted in Sheffield. Or is it not? No. Is it not? That's my sci-fi facts gone wrong then. In general, do you find this has been a really good day today? Has it been enjoyable for you? And also, do you think it's something that will become a bit bigger in the future?
I think it might become a little bit larger, but the venue is quite large to begin with. It's quite packed right now. It is a unique sort of event. It's totally different to the Weekender or the camp. It's much more intense, and it's much more of a big geek disco than anything else.
It's been my first Sci-Fi Weekender, and I have to say Sam Stone and David J. Howe and of course the whole team done excellent work there. And obviously next week one of your other recommendations comes to the fore, Ed, because Eloise and myself will be at Sci-Fi Scarborough.
Oh, Sci-Fi Scarborough is again an entirely different sort of event, where I would say the Sci-Fi Weekender when it's in the scout camp is like an isolation thing, and this is more of a big party. Sci-Fi Scarborough is very much kind of joining a village.
And tomorrow, of course, Eloise, you're dealing with zombies.
I am. Many zombies at Walker Stalker.
It's all great. Now, let's give a wonderful plug for your podcast, Ed, because I think it's time we actually do that. You have the book podcast that comes out, so a shameless plug, please.
So Brave New Words is available on iTunes and all good places where you can find podcasts.
And that's all we need. We'll probably speak with you tomorrow, all sorts of other things like that. Just a reminder, of course, that Starburst magazine is the number one cult magazine, the longest running cult magazine as far as matters featuring yourself. We had Jordan on, Mike Rice, of course, recently. We had Robin Pierce has become a regular on the show. He's been working. It's almost as though there's a sort of Starburst colony based within Siren Radio.
We get everywhere.
Do you know the amazing thing about Sci-Fi Weekender is that you meet so much fantastic talent that's around, and we're now delighted to speak to the gentleman who managed to effectively control, I say the word deliberately, control Brian Blessed and Sam Jones over the last hour or so. He is, of course, the amazing
John Robertson. I've realised you don't know who I am. That's why I had to say it. That's very clever. That's very, very clever. That's amazing. Nice to see you again. Pauses. That's so smart. God, I'm lucky I know who I am.
That's the Lambda training, you see. It's all working through that. Listen, I'm going to open up. Bethany, any questions for John?
Amazing. How was that? Just first of all, interviewing, I say interviewing, it's more of a one-man show, wasn't it? How did you find it?
Oh, that was totally fine. I mean, the thing is, we knew what it was going to be. And it's just one of those things of, yeah, well, when he pauses, do a joke now. And that works nicely, and it's great. I mean, because one of the joys is, right, I mean, the man, he's Brian Blessed, familiar with him. You'll be familiar with him, you know, in about 10 seconds of looking at him. One of the joys is all I wanted to hear was his appalling John Gielgud story. And then to my extreme joy, he just started doing it. I'm like, it's like a jukebox. You don't make requests, he just does it. He knows psychically. And that's the thing, you know, like, he's an old actor. Right, and old British actors are tremendous at telling long, complicated, amusing stories in which principally somebody is buggered. Right, that's sort of all of their stories. And so I knew what I was in for, and it was just lovely. You know, I had the best seat in the house. You know.
Or couch, in fact.
Yes, indeed.
In terms of that, just share with us, because you're not just doing interviews with Brian Blessed and Sam Jones. What else are you doing within Sci-Fi Weekender? Because I hear talk of sword fights, all sorts of things. What's it all about?
Yes, well, it's a duel over a woman, and I'll get my wife out of that castle, so help me. These Saracen dogs will be slaughtered. No, I do a show called The Dark Room, which is a live-action video game, which we do that at rock festivals, and we do that all around the world, and so I'm doing that a bit later on. But because it's a sci-fi convention, what they've done is they've gone, oh, yeah, are you aware you're judging the medieval sword fighting? I'm like, of course I am. That's great. But that's what these things should be. You know, it's wonderful. You should go to a science fiction convention and you should wake up in bed covered with green paint you don't remember applying to yourself.
You become an Orion slave girl.
Well, yes, or an orc, it depends. I see you've seen me in a better mood.
Well,
yes.
It's a different thought. Obviously, Australia. The cultural shift from that point of view, have you noticed any difference in terms of conventions in Australia or indeed in Britain, or is it a case of we're more reserved here or whatever?
Well, you guys drink a lot more, which is fascinating. Like, anime conventions in Australia, they don't drink, right? The first time I saw a cosplayer out of their mind vaulting over some chairs, I was, you know, it was amazing, you know. She had three tails. How she did that without destroying the outfit, I'll never understand. Now, the nice thing about, like, the British sci-fi convention scene is you're really, really good at chanting together. When you're up for something, my God, you're bloody up for something, you know. It's the years of watching Panto, which is Stranger. And it also helps that you've made a lot of the science fiction that I tend to enjoy. So, we've all got a lot to talk about. The only difference is, in Australia, the science fiction conventions are maybe they're slightly more raucous. Although, we talk slower because it's very, very hot and it's very cruel to get that many nerds together in one place at noon, you know what I mean? Like, the difference here is it's like, while you're watching Mr. Blessed, please don't wet yourself, whereas in Australia, we genuinely pump in things that say, stay hydrated. So, yes.
Eloise.
Well, obviously, you're a performer and a comedian. What are you doing after this show?
Could be an offer.
That's deep. And this is for an educational
credit. Exactly.
That's deeply disgusting. God, I hope you're not her lecturer, you sick pig. I have no. Oh, mighty, there's a hashtag for people like you. What I'm doing after the show is my show is on tour. The Dark Room goes around everywhere. I'm doing, of all things, speaking of quintessential British science fiction, I'm doing Port Merricon next weekend.
Prisoner.
So Well, you know where that is. That's in Port Marion. There you go. Good one. That's a good attempted joke to really take our mind off what you just did. Yeah, but the, wow, you'll know Kevin Spacey, pal. You know, he had a lot of charm to hide it. But yeah, I'm touring around. We're doing a lot of stuff. I got shows in London. I got shows up at the Edinburgh Fringe. We got all sorts going on.
Just as well Ben hasn't been here, otherwise who knows where we would have actually gone, but what the heck. Finally, is there a website that people can access the wonderful world of John Robertson?
Yes, indeed. If you go to www.thejohnrobertson.com, you'll find...
the Norwich Nottingham Forest footballer, of course.
No, and I'm not...
easily confused.
Well, of course easily confused, because he has a lot more money and age and weight than I do, but nevertheless, I hate to do this to you, but it's almost like I hear that joke every day. see, what do you got to understand? Yeah, but also, I feel like this is a fun time to do this. On the johnrobertson.com, you can find my stand-up, you can find my stand-up dates, you can find the Dark Room, you can find the Dark Room dates, you can find a link to the Dark Room video game that we made, and you can find the information that I've got a bloody kids book coming out on August 1st. The Little Town of Marrowville will be out, being published by Puffin. Less swear words in that, and you're not invited to the launch. So,
If we get back tomorrow with Abigail, putting a Canadian and an Australian together, I think that's basically all we need to do.
Well, no, I mean, to be fair, a Canadian and an Australian's a beautiful thing, because one says sorry all the time and the other one should, you know, so that's...
Ben, any final things from yourself?
Yeah, I feel like we're being very diplomatic. We're bringing the whole community around the world together just in one broadcast.
Yeah, that's right. Two different types of white person. Exactly. Wow, how?
Exactly.
How amazing. It's the most multicultural thing you've ever seen, you milk. Yeah.
How un-PC are we?
Well, Jesus. How old are you?
Oh, older than what I probably am.
Out of, okay, really? How fascinating. Which are you, the new Dalai Lama, are you? Right.
That's me.
Oh, that's all right. I was about to start interviewing you because I find it fascinating when people who I think are younger than me use the term un-PC without being aware of how boring old people are.
In fact, I'm probably the most un-PC person on this radio show.
Explain to me what that means. What do you think that means?
I basically say everything that comes into my head.
So you're autistic. Is
that
what that means?
That's me. Exactly.
Well, that's
you can think of it like Tourette's or something.
No, Tourette's is a different thing. Tourette's isn't what comes into your mind. Tourette's can be a series of tics, right? The point that I was making is, you know, some people with Asperger's, it just becomes information. Because, like, there's no shame being neurologically atypical. Neuroatypical, sorry. I do have Tourette's. I have a lot of... right? Whereas, I just find it interesting when someone's like, I'm un-PC. I say what comes into my head. No, what you are is probably honest and a burden to people around you.
Yeah.
To be fair.
That's very true.
No, because let me explain something to you, right? Because you could be as honest and say everything you want in your mind without being un-PC. You know, because tell you what, are you a racist?
No.
Well, that's good because racists are un-PC, you know? And if they just say what's on their mind, you get a hate crime.
Very
so that's
true,
why I was fascinated by what you were saying.
No.
You're listening to In the Psychologist's Mind of Ben Lewis with John Robertson and others at the Sci-Fi Weekend. John, absolute delight. Take care. Hopefully we'll speak tomorrow.
Oh, no, it'll be a great joy. Obviously, you'll be picked up by the cops, but that's not important.